Chapter 34. Old papers, and at more counting house stools in it than chairs, not to mention a great monster of a desk straddling over the middle of the floor, and an iron safe sunk into the wall above the fireplace. The solitary little table for purposes of refection and social enjoyment bore as fair a proportion to the desk and other business furniture, as the graces and harmless relaxations of life had ever done, in the persons of the old man and his son, to their pursuit of wealth. It was meanly laid out now for dinner, and in a chair before the fire sat Anthony himself, who rose to greet his son and his fair cousins as they entered. An ancient proverb warns us that we should not expect to find old heads upon young shoulders, to which it may be added that we seldom meet with that unnatural combination, but we feel a strong desire to knock them off, merely from an inherent love we have of seeing things in their right places. It is not improbable that many men, in no wise chivalric by nature, felt this impulse rising up within them when they first made the acquaintance of Mr. Jonas. But if they had known him more intimately in his own house, and had sat with him at his own board, it would assuredly have been paramount to all other considerations. "Well, ghost," said Mr. Jonas, dutifully addressing his parent by that title, "is dinner nearly ready?" "I should think it was," rejoined the old man. "What's the good of that?" rejoined the son. "I should think it was. I want to know." "I don't know for certain," said Anthony. "You don't know for certain," rejoined his son in a lower tone. "No. You don't know anything for certain, you don't. Give me your candle here. I want it for the gals." Anthony handed him a battered old office candlestick, with which Mr. Jonas preceded the young ladies to the nearest bedroom, where he left them to take off their shawls and bonnets, and returning, occupied himself in opening a bottle of wine, sharpening the carving knife, and muttering compliments to his father, until they and the dinner appeared together. The repast consisted of a hot leg of mutton with greens and potatoes, and the dishes having been set upon the table by a slipshod old woman, they were left to enjoy it after their own manner. "Bachelor's Hall, you know, cousin," said Mr. Jonas to Charity. "I say the other one will be having a laugh at this when she gets home, won't she? Here, you sit on the right side of me, and I'll have her upon the left. Other one, will you come here?" "You're such a fright," replied Mercy, "that I know I shall have no appetite if I sit so near you, but I suppose I must." "Ain't she lively?" Whispered Mr. Jonas to the elder sister, with his favorite elbow emphasis. "Oh, I really don't know," replied Miss Pecksniff, tartly. "I am tired of being asked such ridiculous questions." "What's that precious old father of mine about now?" said Mr. Jonas, seeing that his parent was traveling up and down the room instead of taking his seat at table. "What are you looking for?"
"I've lost my glasses, Jonas," said old Anthony. "Sit down without your glasses, can't you?"
returned his son. "You don't eat or drink out of 'em, I think. And where's that sleepy-headed old chuffy got to? Now, stupid. Oh, you know your name, do you?"
It would seem that he didn't, for he didn't come until the father called. As he spoke, the door of a small glass office, which was partitioned off from the rest of the room, was slowly opened, and a little blear-eyed, weazen-faced, ancient man came creeping out. He was of a remote fashion, and moldy, like the rest of the furniture. He was dressed in a decayed suit of black, with breeches garnished at the knees with rusty wisps of ribbon, the very paupers of shoestrings. On the lower portion of his spindle legs were dingy worsted stockings of the same color. He looked as if he had been put away and forgotten half a century before, and somebody had just found him in a lumber closet. Such as he was, he came slowly creeping on towards the table, until at last he crept into the vacant chair, from which, as his dim faculties became conscious of the presence of strangers, and those strangers' ladies, he rose again, apparently intending to make a bow. But he sat down once more without having made it, and breathing on his shriveled hands to warm them, remained with his poor blue nose immovable above his plate, looking at nothing, with eyes that saw nothing, and a face that meant nothing. Take him in that state, and he was an embodiment of nothing. Nothing else. Our clerk, apostrophe said Mr. Jonas, as host and master of the ceremonies. Old Chuffy. Apostrophe, is he deaf? Apostrophe, inquired one of the young ladies. No, I don't know that he is. He ain't deaf, is he, father? Apostrophe, I never heard him say he was, apostrophe replied the old man. Blind? Apostrophe, inquired the young ladies. And no, I never understood that he was at all blind, apostrophe said Jonas, carelessly. You don't consider him so, do you, father? Apostrophe, certainly not, apostrophe replied Anthony. What is he, then? Apostrophe, why, I'll tell you what he is, apostrophe said Mr. Jonas, apart to the young ladies, he's precious old, for one thing, and I am best pleased with him for that, for I think my father must have caught it of him. He's a strange old chap, for another, apostrophe he added in a louder voice, and don't understand anyone hardly, but him. Apostrophe, he pointed to his honored parent with the carving fork, in order that they might know whom he meant. How very strange. Apostrophe, cried the sisters. Why, you see, apostrophe said Mr. Jonas, he's been addling his old brains with figures and bookkeeping all his life. And 20 years ago or so he went and took a fever. All the time he was out of his head, which was 3 weeks, he never left off casting up. And he got to so many million at last, that I don't believe he's ever been quite right since. We don't do much business now though, and he ain't a bad clerk. Apostrophe, a very good one, apostrophe said Anthony. Well, he ain't a dear one at all events, apostrophe observed Jonas. And he earns his salt, which is enough for our lookout. I was telling you, that he hardly understands anyone except my father. He always understands him, though, and wakes up quite wonderful. He's been used to his ways so long, you see. Why, I've seen him play whist, with my father for a partner, and a good rubber too, when he had no more notion, what sort of people he was playing against, than you have. Apostrophe, has he no appetite? Apostrophe, asked Mary. Oh, yes, apostrophe said Jonas, plying his own knife and fork very fast. He eats when he's helped. But he don't care whether he waits a minute or an hour, as long as father's here. So when I'm at all sharp set, as I am today, I come to him after I've taken the edge off my own hunger, you know. Now, Chuffy, stupid, are you ready? Apostrophe, Chuffy remained immovable. Always a perverse old file, he was, apostrophe said Mr. Jonas, coolly helping himself to another slice. Ask him, father. Apostrophe, are you ready for your dinner, Chuffy? Apostrophe, asked the old man. Yes, yes, apostrophe said Chuffy, lighting up into a sentient human creature at the first sound of the voice, so that it was at once a curious, and quite a moving sight to see him. Yes, yes. Quite ready, Mr. Chuzzlewit. Quite ready, sir. All ready. Apostrophe with that he stopped, smilingly, and listened for some further address. But being spoken to no more, the light forsook his face by little and little, until he was nothing again. He'll be very disagreeable, mind, apostrophe said Jonas, addressing his cousins as he handed the old man's portion to his father. He always chokes himself when it ain't broth. Look at him, now. Did you ever see a horse with such a wall-eyed expression as he's got? If it hadn't been for the joke of it, I wouldn't have let him come in today, but I thought he'd amuse you. apostrophe, the poor old subject of this humane speech was, happily for himself, as unconscious of its purport as of most other remarks that were made in his presence. But the mutton being tough, and his gums weak, he quickly verified the statement relative to his choking propensities, and underwent so much in his attempts to dine, that Mr. Jonas was infinitely amused, protesting that he had seldom seen him better company in all his life, and that he was enough to make a man split his sides with laughing. Indeed, he went so far as to assure the sisters that in this point of view he considered Chuffy superior to his own father, which, as he significantly added, was saying a great deal. It was strange enough that Anthony Chuzzlewit, himself so old a man, should take a pleasure in these jibings of his estimable son at the expense of the poor shadow at their table. But he did, unquestionably, though not so much to do him justice with reference to their ancient clerk, as in exultation at the sharpness of Jonas. For the same reason, that young man's coarse allusions, even to himself, filled him with a stealthy glee, causing him to rub his hands and chuckle covertly, as if he said in his sleeve, "I taught him. I trained him. This is the heir of my bringing up. Sly, cunning, and covetous, he'll not squander my money. I worked for this. I hoped for this. It has been the great end and aim of my life." Apostrophe, what a noble end and aim it was to contemplate in the attainment truly. But there be some who manufacture idols after the fashion of themselves, and fail to worship them when they are made, charging their deformity on outraged nature. Anthony was better than these at any rate. Chuffy boggled over his plate so long that Mr. Jones, losing patience, took it from him at last with his own hands, and requested his father to signify to that venerable person that he had better peg away at his bread. Apostrophe, which Anthony did. Apostrophe, cried the old man, brightening up as before when this was communicated to him in the same voice. Quite right, quite right. He's your own son, Mr. Chuzzlewit. Bless him for a sharp lad. Bless him, bless him. Apostrophe, Mr. Jonas considered this so particularly childish, perhaps with some reason, that he only laughed the more, and told his cousins that he was afraid one of these fine days, Chuffy would be the death of him. The cloth was then removed, and the bottle of wine set upon the table, from which Mr. Jonas filled the young lady's glasses, calling on them not to spare it, as they might be certain there was plenty more where that came from. But he added with some haste after this sally, that it was only his joke, and they wouldn't suppose him to be in earnest, he was sure. "I shall drink," apostrophe said Anthony, "to Pecksniff. Your father, my dears. A clever man, Pecksniff. A wary man. A hypocrite, though, eh? A hypocrite, girls, eh? Ha, ha, ha. Well, so he is. Now, among friends, he is. I don't think the worse of him for that, unless it is that he overdoes it. You may overdo anything, my darlings. You may overdo even hypocrisy. Ask Jonas. Apostrophe, you can't overdo taking care of yourself," apostrophe observed that hopeful gentleman with his mouth full. "Do you hear that, my dears?" Apostrophe, cried Anthony, quite enraptured. "Wisdom, wisdom. A good exception, Jonas. No. It's not easy to overdo that. Apostrophe, except," apostrophe whispered Mr. Jonas to his favorite cousin, "except when one lives too long. Ha, ha. Tell the other one that I say. Apostrophe, good gracious me. Apostrophe, said Jerry, in a petulant manner. You can tell her yourself, if you wish, can't you? Apostrophe, she seems to make such game of one," apostrophe replied Mr. Jonas. "Then why need you trouble yourself about her?" Apostrophe, said Charity. "I am sure she doesn't trouble herself much about you." "Apostrophe, don't she though?" Apostrophe, asked Jonas. "Good gracious me, need I tell you that she don't?" Apostrophe, returned the young lady. Mr. Jonas made no verbal rejoinder, but he glanced at Mercy with an odd expression in his face, and said that wouldn't break his heart, she might depend upon it. Then he looked on Charity with even greater favor than before, and besought her, as his polite manner was, to come a little closer. There's another thing that's not easily overdone, Father, remarked Jonas, after a short silence. What's that? Asked the father, grinning already in anticipation. A bargain, said the son. Here's the rule for bargains, do other men, for they would do you. That's the true business precept. All others are counterfeits. The delighted father applauded this sentiment to the echo, and was so much tickled by it, that he was at the pains of imparting the same to his ancient clerk, who rubbed his hands, nodded his palsied head, winked his watery eyes, and cried in his whistling tones, good, good. Your own son, Mr. Chuzzlewit, with every feeble demonstration of delight that he was capable of making. But this old man's enthusiasm at the redeeming quality of being felt in sympathy with the only creature to whom he was linked by ties of long association, and by his present helplessness. And if there had been anybody there who cared to think about it, some dregs of a better nature unawakened might perhaps have been descried through that very medium, melancholy though it was, yet lingering at the bottom of the worn-out cask called Chuffy. As matters stood, nobody thought or said anything upon the subject, so Chuffy fell back into a dark corner on one side of the fireplace, where he always spent his evenings, and was neither seen nor heard again that night, save once, when a cup of tea was given him, in which he was seen to soak his bread mechanically. There was no reason to suppose that he went to sleep at these seasons, or that he heard, or saw, or felt, or thought. He remained, as it were, frozen up, if any term expressive of such a vigorous process can be applied to him, until he was again thawed for the moment by a word or touch from Anthony. Miss Charity made tea by desire of Mr. Jonas, and felt and looked so like the lady of the house, that she was in the prettiest confusion imaginable. The more so from Mr. Jonas sitting close beside her, and whispering a variety of admiring expressions in her ear. Miss Mercy, for her part, felt the entertainment of the evening to be so distinctly and exclusively theirs, that she silently deplored the commercial gentleman at that moment, no doubt, wearying for her return and yawned over yesterday's newspaper. As to Anthony, he went to sleep outright, so Jonas and Cherry had a clear stage to themselves, as long as they chose to keep possession of it. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.